We are in the Princeton Public Library on April 21st, 2023, to listen to an oral history as part of the Jewish Community Foundation of Greater Mercer County Partner Project. My name is Kim Dorman, and I am the interviewer, and I'm here with Alan Goodhart.
I'm Alan Goodhart, interviewee.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Sure.
So can we start with, how did you come to Princeton?
Let's see. Came from Mount Sinai Hospital in Philadelphia to where my folks were living, because they had just recently moved from Philadelphia to Harrison Street, which is about 10-minute walks from where I live now.
And when was that?
Oh, well, that would have been 1941. Mm. After, you know, we were born on January 21st, but I think that's when you stayed in the hospital a little longer. So it's January.
Okay. And how long have you lived in Princeton? Have you been here since you arrived then?
No, not all that time. Started out in Princeton through half of first grade. And then my dad got a job in Chicago, and I was there in Oak Park, just outside of Chicago, for which was sort of like Princeton, Oak Park was, through seventh grade, and then eighth grade through high school, and then when I went to college, also I lived in Princeton.
So, sorry, in eighth grade, you came back to Princeton from Oak Park, or you're still in Oak Park? Okay, great.
No, just came back.
Mm-hmm. And how did you feel about that? Did you like Oak Park? Were you excited to come back to Princeton?
It wasn't a problem. I don't remember. I guess I just was doing what they did. I never thought of questioning it.
Mm. Were there any formative experiences you had in Princeton growing up?
In those early?
Yes, in those early years, or recently. But let's start with school years.
School, how about nursery school?
Okay.
We got kicked out, my twin brother and me, because I think we were a little rambunctious, which... And when we were living I guess I wasn't there, so I don't actually know, but we were, you know, maybe we were just restless because mom wasn't working then, and she had us doing stuff and music and reading and all like that. I bet we were bored.
Mm.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Mm. And then how was the rest of school with that auspicious or inauspicious start? Like you were going through school. Was music always a part of your life?
Well, for my folks playing it. I forgot when we started piano lessons. I didn't last because when I started out, it was just, that's what we're going to do. And then I realized it was going to take a lot of work to do things that just did not move me.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciated music, and later I, got interested in music in a bunch of different ways. In fact, now I'm on board of directors of Art Tech in New York City, which is an early music group, which is what I got, Monteverdi. Especially, and that's their thing.
Yeah.
So that's that's the kind of start we had in life, and kept on going through high school.
So just having things like music provided and sort of seeds set.
It took us to a lot of yes.
Don't let me stop you.
Went to a lot at MacArthur.
Mm.
With the folks, they were busy doing stuff nights. They had friends over, or they're going to music, or
your parents.
Yeah, parents. Well, I didn't do that a lot, but we did it sporadically. It was just a normal thing to do.
Was there a big social life? Did your parents have a big social life?
Yeah. They had a lot of friends. In fact, you know, because I came back to Princeton after other things in college, I got to know a lot of them better.
Mm.
And some of them had kids that I knew from school, not from my grade, but Peter Epstein was one.
Yeah.
I can't remember others. His younger sister too.
When we were speaking earlier, you were talking about, and because this is the Jewish Community Foundation project, a little bit about your bar mitzvah. Can you speak to that?
My folks, I don't know about their membership in the Jewish Center at that time, but anyway, we had a bar mitzvah there. It was in a little building in Princeton, teeny building. And my mother's father, Rabbi Jack, came. He'd been sick with cancer. That was in the days when they never even told him he had cancer. You know, you just didn't talk about it. Fortunately, things have changed since then. Because I've had friends die from cancer. And I was there with him or something, yeah. Anyway, get me back on track.
So we're talking about your bar mitzvah. Oh,
yeah, my brother and I did it. That was I thought of it as for Grandpa Jack, but that was fine. And, you know, we learned how to say the Haftorah, whether we understood it or not. And then we knew things for your bar mitzvah you're supposed to back then get fountain pens.
Oh.
We didn't get any fountain pens.
Good grief.
So once we went to a wedding in recent times close relatives, but just connected. So it was a young girl, a very nice kid that I met a few times. So I got her a fountain pen.
Mm.
That's tradition for you.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you feel like, I think you mentioned that it was sort of early days of the Jewish Center with the bar mitzvah. Was your bar mitzvah one of the first?
It wasn't one of the first. It was the first.
Was the first.
Yeah. And I don't know how long it was. Well, it could have been Peter Epstein. Because
mm-hmm.
he's 1 year being in school. I don't know about age differences,
right.
But it could be. And then they think there were more, but not in my class in high school.
And would you have considered that a formative experience, like having your bar mitzvah, being one of the first? Like, did it feel like it had...
Being first?
Yeah.
I didn't mean a thing.
Didn't mean a thing.
Then. But it's just interesting now that, how did that be?
Yeah.
Well, why would we be the first? We didn't come from a family that was totally involved with the center or that. And they had all Jewish friends, but the ages weren't. The older ones didn't have kids, may I guess. Or they would grow up and went away.
So you're saying they had, your parents had sort of all Jewish or mostly Jewish friends.
Yeah.
Was the Jewish Center a part of your life otherwise?
We tried to go to Sunday school, you know, where you'd study stuff. That none of us, I forgot the other ones at the class, but none of us really got hooked in on that.
So you finished, sorry, go on.
No, that was,
yeah.
It was limited. I mean, I can't remember how many, you know, holiday things we did, went to the Jewish Center for. It could have been, and I don't remember about Seder's. We must have, somehow my memory of them is kind of limited from high school.
Did your family keep kosher?
No, I tried that for a while though in high school, as a thing, and you know, because I wanted to think about what that meant. And it seems like a lot of practices that are mostly meant as a way of paying attention. It's not even really about that. The eating things is saying could possibly have been just about eating safe foods and things like that. I mean, you could mix it in maybe, but so I tried it out and it didn't seem to be helpful in eating well or what the family, you know. It certainly would have made it tough on my mom to cook kosher for me, and certainly not have separate plates for milk and meat and all that stuff. That just...
it wasn't a part of your life.
It wasn't basically a part. But I thought it was... I guess I tried a lot of things just to see what would happen.
Yes. Absolutely. So then you grad. What did you think of the schools? Like, what was your school experience like? Did you have a lot of Jewish friends? Were they non-Jewish? Was that something you even thought about? Yeah, in school.
Well, no. Not a lot of Jewish friends. As adults, I got, you know, good lot of friends. And some of them are Jewish.
Yeah.
Right now, a bunch of them are Jewish. We're all getting old together.
It's nice.
Yeah, there are not. I've run into over the years. There's, two because, especially because of music. And the architect that gave me a lot of my landscape work after I first met him was Jewish. And I didn't actually think about that after. I mean, I thought about him giving me work, and he treated me very well, and I gave him my best. It was a great relationship.
And so you graduated Princeton High School?
Yeah.
And then you went and did what?
I went to college because I was supposed to go to college.
Where did you go to college?
Well, I wound up going to Harvard, but at first I thought I wanted to go to a smaller school to Amherst. And I went there and had one of the worst interviews, and I said, why would I want to? It was a nice place. But my folks obviously my dad especially wanted me to go there. It was easier to get in there. I mean, as I finished high school, my record was pretty good. I mean, I was 12th in the class of doing, so because I did my homework and stuff. But I wouldn't have made it now. Somebody with that kind of record wouldn't go to Harvard.
Yeah, it's hard. What about your brother? Your twin brother?
Go to Harvard, yeah. Well, he was second in the class. And he would have been first if he went to more school, but He decided he had to play the piano a lot. He was really serious about that. You know, he had some difficulties with the parents about making so much of that. But anyway, my mom would write him excuses because he was fit to go to school some days. And because he was home, she didn't say that part. Home playing the piano for 6 hours. I mean, that's devotion. He should have been doing that.
And then what did you study at Harvard?
Well, I didn't know what to study. First year, what did I do that was voluntary? I can't remember. But I got this idea... in thinking about what I might do with the life, I said I wanted to do something that was worth doing for other people. And I didn't, you know, like being a doctor. I found out how much I shouldn't do that because we had doctor friends. My folks had doctor friends. And I said, you have to have a really disciplined life to do that. You can't make mistakes. Mm. Just can't do it. I couldn't lead that kind of life. You know, I'd like to try. I mean, I couldn't have a life where I could hurt somebody like that, because I was not the right person. And I have a good friend in Tai Chi who is a doctor, and he is like that.
Mm.
And I see what his life is like, although he's great and he's a good colleague and friend. But that wasn't for me.
Right.
So I decided I'd try biology.
Okay.
And I wiped that out with the thing you had to do as a science. You have to do lots of things in laboratories and things like that, and do things that I had not the slightest interest in.
Mm.
But it'll come back to me later, you'll see.
Okay.
So what am I going to do? I asked my brother. I said, well, you could read books. You could study English literature, which I did. I was not particularly a very good student of that, but I did do it. But on the way, I took a couple of art classes, which were my only A grades in college.
Mm.
The other ones were pretty good, but I did not learn at that time what that meant. That was later.
Okay.
And it went on like that. So I finished college with a degree, not with honors, but successfully. And what was I going to do? So I said, well, even given my grades, I went to this program that had a short master's in get a degree, I guess a master's in teaching or something like that.
Okay.
Said, but your grades aren't that great in English, so why don't you take a couple of courses in summer school? So we went back up to Harvard to take two courses. One of them, I forgot what exactly they were. I'm trying to see how I got to the next step here. Oh, yeah. I had rent a room in a boarding house. Well, it wasn't a boarding house. It was all one kitchen and rooms. And one day I was eating in there, and it was just a table that two people could sit at each other. And the guy on the other side was a landscape architect, recently returned from working overseas. And he convinced me in about 2 days that I wanted to be a landscape architect.
Mm.
Because one of the first things I found out about it, it isn't just a science. There is a science because you're making things. You got to know about that kind of stuff, including plants and trees and biological stuff, which was never my major interest in doing design. But I got pretty good by making a really good friend who was a landscape contractor and he was a landscape architect. And he, you know, I had a source. I didn't have to be a specialist in that.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of finished the courses, sort of, because I applied to Harvard. He helped me apply, and my good luck was they had a short list of people coming. Mm-hmm. There was room, and that was the beginning of a profession. That was that was the fall of
1962.
So how many years ago is that from now?
Don't make me do math.
Okay, you get to 62.
62, 82, 92,
02, 12,
22,
61
years ago?
No, 61, yeah. And 50 of those years I've been living in Princeton. I've talked about that.
So tell me what about your life and your experience and your interests made you, were you bringing into becoming a landscape architect if it wasn't sort of the biological plants thing? What did you want to express or what drew you to it?
Well, it's a service industry.
Mm-hmm.
You are, unless you're a billionaire doing this and you can do your own projects, it's art, it's drawing, it's thinking, it's solving problems, it's doing it for other people and learning from other people what you need to do. That, you know, it was doing what you need,
mm-hmm,
to make things happen. And I like, well, there's evidence of what you do. That's another thing that was important. You can see. And yesterday, I'm trying to get rid of so much paper in my life. I grew up in a paper life, and I had drawers of files of jobs I did, and I've been going through them to see what I did. And actually, I know what I did. I mean, I've even talked about it, but I got the visual evidence of what I did. A lot of drawings, some of them which were built, but they all have a similar character. It's not that there's a few of them are unique because it was special things, but some of them were just doing the right thing. And that was important to me.
So what do you, I mean, like that character is sort of like, I imagine what you're bringing to the project, which is obviously sort of a combination of what other people want and what you're bringing. So do you feel like you could define that character?
That character?
That's common in the projects, like that what you bring to the landscape architecture.
Actually, one of the goals is that you don't even know it was designed; it just works.
Mm.
And you know, I one of the architects I worked for a long way before I, you know, said, I'm not going to be an employee anymore. was a sort of formal approach, trying to make it so you know where to go and that things, you know, are balanced or they're open or that, you know, each of the pieces are doing something that gives who's ever there an idea of where to go or how to get there, unless the idea is make it complicated because it's more fun, you know, you start out figuring out, what are you trying to get out of this thing? On public projects, where anything where the people who are going to live in it aren't there yet, you got to figure it out a different way. Sometimes they say, well, what do you need? You got to start with what has to be there. And if, you know, could be, if all you get for group housing is a courtyard, then you want to make sure that you can get in the sun. But if you're in Princeton or anywhere near here, when it's cool, or you can be in the shade when it's hot, and that there are plenty of seats for people, and it changes during the year, and then that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did some, you know, free work like gardens up north. I've done a bunch of them, and all of them were playing with, you know, things. So we did massive yellow flowing things, that temporary, mm-hmm, like 30,000 yellow flowers and things.
Mm.
Did a couple like that. or I like brown global things still, but back then it had these giant spheres that it was sort of like, you know, somebody rolled a bunch of big things, little things, or there's a big thing and a little thing, and it's sort of like bowling, lawn bowling, but they were big granite spheres.
Oh yeah,
just nothing too big, just an idea thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite? Was there like a favorite project or something you're sort of long time proud of still?
Yeah, well, I have pictures of. Yeah, I like them. You know, that. Well, one of the best things I designed. It started with working on a park in Trenton, where all the furnishings are stainless steel, which I had to learn about. You know, it's steel, isn't it? Going to get too hot,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of people said that you can't do that. And so I called a physics, you know, guy in physics, you know, important person in Princeton. Happened to, his wife happens to be Jewish, and friends of Steve, Janet, the architect. Anyway, he said, "Well, you know, you do perforated, put little holes all the way around, and that'll give somebody plenty of time to get up if it's warm and too hot. So you don't have to worry about that." So in the park, there's a lot of furnishings. There's 15 of benches, a beautiful bench I designed. Had to learn about what meets the, you know, well, you're reasonably tall, but you know, both of my wives are, you know, were shorter, and very often the seats are too outdoors are too wide. They've got to stick their feet out straight, and they can't get their feet on the ground. And then there's a too big a curve in the back. You don't want to decide how far somebody wants to get back. I made them round, but it was just a little round. And then you want to get the slope back so it's comfortable for everybody and maybe high enough, you know, everybody's shoulders and a lot of things. And so I had to learn a lot to do that. And I knew it was a success because I went out there one day to take pictures of it. And there was two police sitting on the bench. Said, if they go for that, I must have got something right.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's it. And I had to figure out that for other people. And the other thing I got to do, that was a piece of art, was an obelisk. Stainless steel obelisk. But it wasn't solid. It had the four corners that go up like that. But it had sort of like peeled off surface into sort of wings. And then up at the top, where there's usually that dome and all the stone ones, it's pointed like that. Yeah, but where they were painted gold, that was part of the deal. So we have lights going up into it. And then we have water squirting at it from all over. That's one of my favorites. And the other one is in my backyard now, but it was for one of the summer things in over where are we? Oh, over there, where the new housing is, just off of whatever that road becomes.
And Witherspoon?
Not Witherspoon, the other way.
Washington?
No, it's not. It's not that way. It's that way, where the Arts Council is on the.
Oh yes. Okay. Side. Yeah. So sort
there
of.
There were the two summer gardens.
Off of Paul Robeson, the urban garden, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did. It was one where there were going to be artists of some sort working with scientists. So I picked my friend, who is a geologist. You know, I thought of, I mean, I took thought it's about geology too, until after the summer I took. And I got to tell you that one.
Okay.
Because this got me on a way to where I was going. I thought, no, I couldn't do biology. I forgot about the geology thing, which was an incredible experience, except after a while, since I hadn't been in mountains so much, my boots become hurt too much. I mean, I really couldn't do it. I mean, I took the day off. Usually it was going on and help carry rocks back and things like that with somebody from the university, graduate student. And I said, you know what I like about this? I like the mountains. That's it. I don't want to go back to the university and slice up rocks and do the stuff to learn about what's going on. But this time I got to make something, which was art. Because he does a science where you're studying about continents get built and things, and continental plates that are different and slide across the other. Well, we made something out of stainless steel that is like a slice cut down so you could see all the rocks, as how they move down, plates moving down, plates moving that way. And we did it with different kinds of material with holes through it. Actually, it was two-sided, so you had a mirror on. We put stones, actual stones, from what you would find at those different places, a row of them there, it's one kind, which we found in a yard that sold stone for, you know, countertops and things. But they were really actually the right ones, except for two. One was because you can't find enough of it to make a little circle like that. The other one, because it's about mountain building. That's what happens when these things slide together. You got stuff like a volcano. So the one that represented the hot stuff that came out of the volcano was the right sort of orangey plastic thing that we could fit up there. Anyway, it's beautiful. And it was in the show. And Lake Hollister and I were going to try and get it to somewhere by the geology building. And all I wanted, I wanted the $20,000 it cost me to make it.
Yeah.
Not me, but it cost it to get it. And they weren't interested. So I said, well, it's mine. So I brought it home.
I think we have a film about the urban garden actually in the collection of the library.
Yeah, well, it might appear in it. I have a video. This is one of the talks I'm very sure about giving about what I know, is that experience, because I had to learn all about that stuff and explain it. And it took a while to figure all that out. And so I had the guy who did the movie for the Urban Garden make a movie, just a half an hour movie for just about subduction. This is a great name. Subduction and orogeny.
Subduction and?
Orogeny.
Orogeny.
You could be have to save that because you could think. But it's about a real worldly big thing that's making us, that's how we got here, part of how we got here.
Amazing. You were talking, there's two sort of threads. One is about, I think, lifelong learning.
Yeah.
And then separately, you were talking about benches and things that you've learned or learned to do. And before, when we were talking, you mentioned architecture and learning from Las Vegas and then your own sort of take on that. I wanted to know if you'd share.
Well, yeah, I got... I learned a lot... because I learned Spanish, I wanted to go to Mexico. And my folks No, I think what happened, I found a record in a record store that had records, just the normal thing, about the blind troubadour of Oaxaca. And I played that, and I really loved it. But my folks went to Mexico first, and they went there, and they found him playing in a cafe in the Zocalo. So I don't know if it was the next year, but shortly after that, I went to Mexico to be in Oaxaca. And he wasn't there anymore. I had to find him out in the provinces. And I went to him, and he played music for me.
Very special.
And then now, so that was, I guess the first big one for me. But then, when my second marriage with Carol, her maiden name was Argentieri. And we have wound up going to Italy a lot.
Mm.
Last September we were there for 4 weeks.
Lovely.
And for two of them we were in Florence. And I've had, because of shoulder issues and some other, crashes or things, I had walking sticks. Because it helps with balance, for sure, but also it helps for distance because I can, by walking right. And we were walking an average of at least 2.5 miles a day for 14 days.
Wow.
Some of which were, we got, I think, 1 7-mile day. So, it's part of what I can do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
In Italy, if there's a will, there is a way.
Yeah.
Like that. And that's been an important part. I know enough Italian to get unlost if I get lost and find food. But Carol's been studying it a lot, so we may be having to go back.
Oh, wonderful. So lifelong learning, I feel like.
It's everything. It's learning, I'm going back and learning what I learned. I mean, stuff that I actually taught students some of this stuff. A lot of students. I was surprised at how many folders of, short ones, but I did a lot of semester long courses at Rutgers.
You were teaching at Rutgers?
Yeah. In the landscape program.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some I taught short things at the adult school. I think I did one 10-week at the adult school.
Wow.
And I found out I had students asking questions of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I have their sheets that they filled out. And I bet that's the one thing they really learned from the course.
What?
Asking the questions.
How important do you feel like asking the questions is to learning?
I think you'll fail if you don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you get used to it, then it's like it's like you don't have to wait around for an inspiration. You do something while you're waiting.
Because
and if you're doing something, you'll know when you get there. I ask myself, why do I like Monteverdi? And as a result, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Because the tuning of the instruments is different. There are a lot of strings, and they're not tuned to the, what Bach did to the well-tempered clavier. It isn't that. It's a clear note. The third is a third.
Mm.
It's not quite a third, and it makes a lot of difference. The third and the fifth, their relationship is actually complicated unless you do, you know, by the numbers all the way up.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't. I'm learning all the time.
Well, why would you know? Because I didn't know about that until I heard it. And I said, you know, I wasn't sure why I was liking it so much. But then one time there was a house concert, and this guy had a collection of recorders, you know, 100 or something like that. But he also had a tuner, so he could play, you know, 1/3/5 octave both ways. And there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's a purer sound. And then I learned also about, you know, different, you know, scales in music, and changing pitch by just starting playing an octave of notes starting on D instead of C,
mm-hmm.
and some of them work. Or they're different things that aren't quite the same succession of different, you know, because, you know, there's between the E and the F, there's no black key. And between the B and the C, there's no black key.
Okay.
So then I play banjo. I bought a banjo my freshman year in college.
Oh, fun.
It was classic banjo. Anyway, later on, there was a story how I figured it out from Pete Seeger and all that kind of thing. But then I found about...
Wait, you figured it out from Pete Seeger?
Listen. Well, yeah, he has a book.
Okay.
How to Play the Five-String Banjo. That's been... I just did that for a while. And the rest of it I learned by playing the banjo,
mm-hmm.
and different things. And I learned about a scale with a raised third. And I used it first to play the Star of the County Down, my favorite Irish tune.
Okay.
It's very different from the classic one. It's an old ballad. Because it's done as a jolly thing. But this guy is, you know, trying to, you know, find the Star of the County Down,
mm-hmm.
and it's about what he wants. And to me, that's an emotional story, and the jolly version isn't. It's just that.
Did you, like, so finding what you want, do you feel like you're still searching? Or do you feel like you found what you want? I know that we were talking about a song. But
what I really wanted is get through all the paper. No, it's been very hard. It is buckets full of going out and recycling.
Mm.
And I'm trying to save the good stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, my daughter's come up twice to help me do this. And it's a massive job.
Yes, it really is.
And I'm doing it at too old. I mean, I should have done this. I could have done it a long time ago. They've been in those file cabinets.
I think you sort of do it when you're ready, right? Or when you have to.
When I want to, if I want to finish. Also, I don't want to leave a mess.
Right.
You know, 82, I 82. Oh, I only got, you know, I say, well, I better hurry up because I'm getting up towards 100, you know. You know, the likelihood, I don't know.
Do you feel like we started off talking about, you know, some experiences that you had being Jewish or Judaism?
Yeah.
Do you feel like it had that
yeah.
cultural heritage had an impact on your life? And
yeah,
if so, what
I,
was
what
it?
I do. I mean, it's a combination of not fooling around. I don't know, just take things seriously. My brother was always called the serious me one, and me the happy-go-lucky one. So that's all louder.
Mm.
But I'm very serious about the decisions I actually make. And I do the best I can. As landscape architect, the only thing I wasn't really super good at was making a lot of money at all. I'd never focused on that. And I chose to do it mostly on my own because if I ran an office, I mean, I could do it. But I saw what people who ran an office do. They don't get to do the design. They don't get to, you know, get the message. They don't get to do the job. They get to manage the job. I didn't want to manage the job. Mm. So I that's what I learned. You know, my father always had a job.
Yeah.
But then he was the director, and that was important. It's the printing ink. That's what he was working with.
Yeah. You've been in Princeton a long time.
Yeah, I don't want to leave, by the way.
You don't?
No, it's a problem for my wife. She wants to go to Italy. Really, I did. You know, I got it. I got, you know, I'm on South Harrison Street. My backyard is the university field. Across the street on the front is the Butler Track, which now has no buildings on it.
Right.
And it's a park. And it, you know, how long does it take to walk down to the towpath by the lake? And it's not as if I, you know, walk to town all the time. I get in my car a lot, but I like it just exactly where I am.
Yeah.
I mean, we remodeled, spent a lot. We bought a house for $36,000 in 1972. And we spent 10 times that on remodeling by the time we got done in 2007.
Mm.
However, part of it was the south-facing side moved on the first floor, moved out 8 feet. And it's got 7 windows.
Beautiful.
And it's all there all the time. And it's much open on the first floor. It's all open. There's living room, dining room, kitchen, no doors.
Beautiful.
It was.
So, I mean, like, with it, you've been in a long time. That sounds like a beautiful house. How, like, do you feel like Princeton's changed since you were, you know?
Quite a lot. You know, it's a place for people come to go shopping.
Ah.
It didn't used to be. It had service shopping that was great. We had 2 grocery stores. At the shopping center, there were 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting crowded. It's getting too expensive. The only reason we could do that is because the taxes on our house are reasonable because we're on Harrison Street.
Right.
If we had this same house fixed up the way we did somewhere else, it'd probably be worth more. But if we sold this house for what it's worth, which is, you know, reasonably, it's probably $600,000 or $700,000, we couldn't buy another one. And how would we ever get this? How could we ever get better? It's a little not the normal arrangement of things, and it's basically only got 2 bedrooms upstairs, but one of them's got to go through to get to the bathroom upstairs, and an attic, which could be a room now because we got the right sort of windows for it. So, but it's great for us.
And that's what matters.
And I have my office in the old one-car garage from 1910. So that's my office and studio. I call it my. I call it lots of things.
Mm.
I call it my office studio. I found a street sign somewhere that was about this big. Is that about that big? and it says on it, imaginary place. And it's got a whole lot of bullet holes. So I have that out. I have the bench model from the one for the park in Trenton. It was the one set, the one that we made first, and then made little adjustments to for the final ones. And that's just outside my office.
Mm.
So on it, I put that sign, imaginary place.
Your imaginary.
And I have a lot. I collect a lot of things.
Mm. Are there any other stories you want to share with us before we close?
Well, I wrote all this, and I've got maybe 6 minutes. Let's see. it doesn't matter here. Here's one about going through these things. I found the things, exercises I did with students, and one of them was called First Impressions Last. It's one of the things I figured out you ought to value. I've done that a number of times, and with these students, I decided to do it with 4-year-olds.
Okay.
Four-year-olds. Jennifer was, my daughter was 4. Find out, what do you think you can learn? And I had the students go talk to 4-year-olds to find out what they wanted. And it's not what they have in the design recreation magazines about what you put do for little 4-year-olds. It was funny. Let me see if I can get this out fast enough to show you, because I have the list somewhere. That's another, this is stuff I found out I did a long time ago. There it is. Real quick, you don't have to read that. But just look, this is an example of what the kids said.
Well, do you want to describe it to me? Because
I haven't got glasses. I've got to dig them out of here. If they're in here.
So what we're looking at is some pieces of paper, and the one that I'm holding says First Impressions Last.
Yeah.
And this book is a collection of prototypical designs for play experiences for 4th graders. These designs are based on the ideas about and the experiences of the physical environment that we gathered from these young, growing up persons. We used a workbook I made as a device for generating and directing responses in a way and into a form that we could use to give our clients environments that fit them.
I missed it.
It's okay. Was there anything surprising you learned from the impressions of 4-year-olds?
Yeah, that's they really like to get out in the ground and do stuff.
Yes.
That's, you know, I've designed playgrounds, and I try to do it with interesting equipment and try and get it for all ages, inclusion, and all those kinds of things. But really, the kids, you know, to say, go out in that field and come back for supper or something like that, or you know, figure out things you can do, you know, if you go for walks. I don't see why the kids should be in playgrounds. They should be in
exploring,
you know. You should have half of it full of trees or something so they can climb the trees, or, you know, there are a lot of things you can do that aren't in the books. I don't feel guilty about what I did, but because sometimes you do what you get to do.
Right.
As long as you think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's just limited.
If there was something that you could sort of say that you would sort of pass on, or a lesson that you'd want someone to, or a question you'd like people to ask of themselves, what that might be. What might that be?
About their homes or anything?
Anything.
Well, think about what you want. Ask questions about it. Do something. I mean, just simple things.
I love it.
You know, paying attention. You know, that's the thing about Tai Chi. Never mind the martial arts. Never mind the meditation. Paying attention.
Mm. I feel like we started that with that in your practice of exploring being kosher. And we're ending with that in your new practice of Tai Chi.
I guess that's a good summary.
Pay attention.
Pay attention.
Thank you so much, Mr. Goodhart.
Sure.